beginning. It's Moitzei Shabbos. We're on Beis Amud Beis at the last line. Okay. So Moisef Bar Bar Mamel. So he's going to find a place here which argues on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Let's remind ourselves what Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said. So he said that the only time the cheresh is possible to write again is only if he was originally a cheresh from birth, but if he was healthy and then he became a cheresh, then if you have a cheresh moimin al gabav, then he could write a get. That was what he said. Now, Rabbi Yochanan said that there are people who argue on him. Now, he's going to ask, Hamas nisa pliga. We have the following brisa, which the favor seems to dispute his shita. Now let's go to Gimel and Aleph, and let's see the brisa. Hare shekasa v'chsav yado. A person wrote directions in his own handwriting. Now, if he's writing, before we even go any further, if he's writing in his own handwriting, that means he was not a cheresh from birth. There's an assumption here that a cheresh from birth would never be able to write directions. This has to be, obviously, someone who was healthy and became a cheresh. So that's just put that out at the very outset. So he wrote the instructions, Shama le Sofer, saying to the Sofer in the Ksav, not he's not speaking, he's a cheresh. He's saying to the Sofer, Ksov, write out, get from my wife, Leidim Chasson, we're telling, he's writing to the witnesses to sign a get for his wife. So the Brisa says, even though they wrote it, they followed his instructions, they gave it back to him, and he gave it to his wife, it's not a get. Now, obviously, according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, there is a case where it could be a get if you had a cherem on the Malgabov. So why does it say in this Brisa that it's not a get across the board? Clearly, this argues on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. That's the whole thing. So if we have this Befeir Shabraisa, why did Rabbi Yochanan say it anonymously? It's hard for me to buy into such a shock of a taya. It just doesn't resonate with me. Like, who cares? If he said it anonymously, didn't say it anonymously, like, there's this assumption that they knew every brisa, and that seems to be the assumption here. They knew everything, and whatever they said was exact. And if it's not exact, then it's a kasha, and we have to deal with it. That's what's happening here. Amar Rabbi Yosa, so here's the answer. Amar Sofer, v'lesi pliga. I could say my sefer. Let's say the end of the brisa, and you'll see it doesn't argue. How so? So it says in the end of that brisa, and again, Ashishma is koilai. It's not again until they hear his voice. He has to speak. So that's what it says in the Brisa. So the Gemara says, Lo sof dover acha yishmu was kolo. Is that really right? That they have to hear his voice? I feel herkin rosho. Even if he nods, that's just as good, right? So why by saying something inaccurately, that shows that this brisa is in general an inaccurate brisa. That's what he's proving. You're trying to prove from this brisa that it argues on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. I'm going to show you it doesn't argue on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Why? Because the sefer of the brisa says he has to speak. And he doesn't have to speak, he could just nod. Atomar les kan. Clearly you must say there is not a precise text here of the brisa's latter clause. So therefore in the ratio also. So let's see 7 and 8. Okay, the footnote to understand this a little better. The latter clause must be amended to read that it is not a valid get unless he informs the scribe. Okay, not until they hear his voice, but rather let's replace that with, instead of voice, it means he's letting them know his ratzon. He could let him know his ratzonai day his voice. He could let his know his ratzonai day hear kenes rosho by nodding his head.
So why isn't writing enough?
Writing's not enough because it right. Well, we're gonna see. We'll see in a second. Let's see what it says. In number 8, the bride's first clause should be amended to read: if the husband instructed others, that they should instruct a scribe to write and witnesses to sign, then the get is invalid because it has nothing to do with being deaf. The get is invalid because of the rule that you can't that the husband has to directly instruct the witnesses and the scribe. Right? He cannot appoint an agent to issue the instructions. That's mili lo mimsri l'shliach in the words of the Talmud Bavli, right? You can't write instructions to someone else to tell the sofer and the edim to give to write and give and
sign. So I'm saying if he wrote, write it again, and they asked him, should I write again, and he nodded yes, so that would be fine.
That would be fine. He cannot appoint an agent to issue the instructions because mere words cannot be assigned to an agent, and so on. Let's move on. Now, it continues in its second clause by stating that the get is not valid unless the scribe and witnesses hear his voice. As the Gemara mentioned, the language of this clause is imprecise, for nodding his head also suffices. In fact, it suffices also for him to instruct them in writing as long as he does so directly, not through an intermediary. So there you have at the bottom. So you're right. I'm just making sure it's clear. According to Reb Chaim, the footnote here, it would taka be good if he would give direct ksav directly to them. So you're right. Either his voice, hirkanis rosho, or aide ksav, where the ksav is directly speaking to them. And they're changing the ratio now and saying that the ratio is talking about where you wrote it to tell a shliach to tell someone else. So that's the reason why it's possible in the ratio. That's on, and so in Mela, so what do we gain by this? By changing the Bryce's meaning, we don't have a machlokas anymore of Shimon Gamliel. The whole raya that was Shimon Gamliel was, it wasn't like a Shimon Gamliel, because why does it say the get is puzzle? You should be able to have the God alignment on Gabal. The answer is that this chlal, not the problem over here. Here the problem is Mili Lamentsu L'Shliach. It's a totally Bazundra problem, and that problem is a problem across the board, even by a healthy person. That was Rabbi Yose's approach. Now the Gemara says otherwise. Amar Mona is Khan. We can say actually that this is a precise text. In other words, the Seifa, the whole reason why he reinterpreted the Seifa is because he had a kasha on the Seifa. It said in the Seifa you have to hear his voice. What do you mean you have to hear his voice? You could be Hirkanis Rosho as well. That was his kasha. So Rabbi Yonah is saying that's not a good kasha. Why isn't that a good kasha? He hashmas kol. He had konas rosh. It's the same thing. The Bryce doesn't have to speak out each thing. It's, right? Either case, he's communicating his intention. So since the text of the latter clause is correct, so now the whole binyan falls apart, right? So there's no basis to assume the text in the first clause is incorrect. So your whole approach to reinterpreting the whole Bryce falls apart. That's basically what Ramana is saying. It means, as understood originally, the person became a deaf mute, issues written instructions, it gets invalid, and it wouldn't matter even if it's Golol Amagabov, so it would dispute Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay, fine. Now we're on 3a2. Now the Gemara questions his assumption that speaking is the same as nodding. Reb Zaira Boi Kumli Reb Mono. Can you say that it's no different? The Gemara is kind of asking a sarcastic question here. You're telling me that nodding his head is just like his voice? What do you mean it's the same? When it comes to nodding, we have to test him out with three questions. He has to say yes, yes, no, or, and so on and so forth. But when you say words, do you have to ask him to repeat himself three times? That's ridiculous, right? So this is a funny question. Like, this is I don't know what the Gemara wanted. The Gemara wanted to slug up his statement that nodding is not like speaking. Okay, fine. Amalei, so he answered him, L'shmias kol pamachas. You're right. If you're hearing the voice a single time is sufficient. L'harkonas rai, shleisha pamim. But once he nods three times, it's equivalent to spoken. So I'm correct in asserting that when the Bryce's latter clause mentions hearing the husband's voice, it means seeing him and nod his head three times, and that's the same thing as hearing his voice one time. And what are you asking, Kashas, you know? It follows that the Bryce's first clause is also worded correctly. The same, again, back to the same point. So now let's go back. Amar Rabbi Yudon, Tamon Ba'imer Kachva Kachasisi. Now he has another approach over here. This is another approach trying to reconcile the Braisa with Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion, right? Tamon Ba'imer Kachva Kachasisi. So when we're talking about taking Truma off, right? Or writing and giving a get under with a Gadol Emunat Gabov where we say it's okay. So there it is, something that was done in the past. Such and such I have done. Ha-ha, but in the Braisa, we're talking about a case where the Cheresh is telling somebody else, V'aymer kach v'kach asu, we're referring to something that has to be done in the future. He merely issues written instructions to the scribe and the witnesses that they should execute a get for his wife. In this case, Rav Shimon Gamliel would agree that we cannot rely on the deaf mute's instruction, even if he issues it under the guidance of a Gadol Emunat Gabov. The svara behind there, at the bottom, it says here, in 15, he says, with respect to someone who became deaf mute, we can rely on his action that he actually carried out under guidance, but we cannot rely on the instructions to others to do an act in the future, even if he issues the instructions with a Gadol Emunat Gabov. An act that he does with finality has more gravity than mere instructions that he issues and is treated more seriously. That's what it seems to say here. Okay. It's not such a partial to Gemara, this piece of Gemara, that assumption. But let's go on. Now we're on 3B. Rabbi Yamin Bar Levi Boy. So he doesn't like this whole explanation. He doesn't like that whole thing. He's going to reject this chiluk between L'sha'avar and L'havar. He says, no. If you consider the Cheresh as being a bar das, as far as past these are concerned, then yeshva das lahavo. You can't make this distinction. It has more gravity. I don't buy that. This is like a, I don't buy that chiluk type of an argument. It's not based on a raya. He's just basically arguing to be smarter, right? They're the same. In short, there's no logical basis to distinguish between the case where one became a deaf mute, wrote and gave a get, and the case where he instructed others to write a get. So therefore, it disqualifies it, and again, it's going to be an argument on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel.
It sounds like a lechachila, you shouldn't do this, but b'di'evet, if he did it, then it's...
Not at all. He's saying the opposite.
Oh,
saying,
which case?
No, never. Either it's good or
behind,
it's not.
The one behind, I'm sorry.
Okay. Amr Abdumi. Now we have two explanations to try and explain this. One, first explanation is Rav Abdumi's shot, which is that this is a problem of shlichus. So even though he writes instructions, we can't execute it because he's not about shlichus, and therefore we can't. It's like, you know, there's a dis. He has a nice note here, which is kedai to read inside, because it really is Megala, in the footnote 2, really is Megala, the whole parsha over here, with Gittin, and it actually taught me something I never knew before. If I would have asked you, when I instruct the sofer to write a get from my wife, what is going on there? Am I making the sofer my shliach? Because it says in the pasuk, v'chasav lo sefer krisus v'nosim b'yada, and I have to write the get myself, and instead of writing it myself, I'm instructing the sofer to write it. That's one way of learning. Another way of learning is that there's no key for me to write it myself. There's a din of lishma. You have to write a get lishma. So the way you accomplish lishma is by hearing a tzivi from the Baal telling you to write it. So then you can. It's a din in lishma. It's not a din in shlichus to make the tzivi as if I wrote it. How would you have learned before tonight? I'm asking you guys.
Lishma. I thought it was lishma also.
I'm going to assume you also thought it was lishma. We all thought it was lishma.
Yeah.
Now, look at this footnote. In describing the divorce proceedings, the Torah says, "Possible to say for Christus or not some other." This means, in order for the get to be valid, the husband himself must write it and give it to her, or write a shliach. And that's as if as he did it himself. Thus, when the sofer is appointed to write a get, he does it as a shliach. Okay? Now, a competent person can make a shliach. A mentally incompetent person is excluded. He cannot appoint anyone to write a get for his wife. That's why the Brisa says that if a husband who is a deaf mute instructed a scribe and witnesses to writing, in writing, to prepare a get for his wife, the get's invalid. But if he writes the get himself and delivers it with a gadol amid al gabov, then it might be valid. So the Brisa does not conflict with the opinion of Shimon ben Gamliel. In other words, if Shimon ben Gamliel said, if you have a gadol amid al gabov, that the cherish who was once a pikeach can go ahead and deliver the get. But that's if he wrote the get himself. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel didn't tell us the details behind who wrote the get. This Brisa is telling me a different problem, that since he's not a bar shlichas, so the sofer can't be mekayim the din of a chasav law, that he should be the shliach of the cherish, because a cherish is not a bar shlichas. That's the way he's explaining how the Brisa does not argue on Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Okay?
Cherish, shoten, and katan are three different people. Cherish, if he's a bar dat, I'm saying he's a gadol.
He cannot make a shliach. He's excluded from shlichus.
Even if he's a bardat,
doesn't make a difference.
So what does the hen in law do?
You know what it is, the what?
Three times he nods yes or no. You know, to three different questions. That shows that he's a bardat.
Well, we're saying now that it's possible again. The Brisa says it's a puzzle again.
Right, but I'm saying what the Gemara just brought.
It's puzzle.
It's puzzle?
The Brisa says it's puzzle. Right? Isn't that what it said?
I thought we said that
there we go.
If he shows dot, so then he can be Bemane.
It says, let's go back to the top of the page. Hare Shakasav Savyado.
Right, but we changed that. We said that that's mila lumim sir l'shliach.
Wait a second. That was that one. That was the dichoy. That was the way we wanted to be dochayed. Now we're being chozer on that dichoy, and we're saying no. That's not correct. Because according to that mahala, you're right. At that level, at that point, it was. You're asking at that point we were saying he was a bardas. So how come he's not Patara Shlichus? Okay, I hear the catch. He brings this from Babli 23a with Rashi, Labanei Deyaninu, and Rambam Shluchin Veshutvim 2-2. I didn't look into it, but I thought that they're excluded. Chereshei Nukam are excluded as far as I know. Okay. So now, he asked, actually, he follows up. I'm sorry, that's the next paragraph. He asked your kasha the next paragraph. I apologize. He asked the kasha. Now, the Gemara on 3a established that if the deaf-mute husband nodded affirmatively in response to three questions, then the witnesses and the scribe may execute the get. That's because once he nodded yes three times and correctly shook his head no three times, he's been confirmed to be mentally competent.
Right, he's bardat.
So in that case he's able to appoint a shliach. It proved that he's a bardas.
Uh-huh.
Right. As long as he's deemed incompetent, he cannot appoint a shliach. So that's how they're learning. Okay. So in other words, okay, that's an important point, right? So he's using the test to prove that he is a bardas. Okay. So let's just say this again. So let's make sure we have this right. So Rav Abdumi's teretz is that the Brisa is talking about a cheresh, meaning we have a cheresh that we haven't proven through the nod test whether he's a bardas or not. And therefore, when he makes a shliach, there's no shlichos. Wait a second, he's saying that's even if it's written instructions. I thought that it seems like you have to have both. So he has to write the instructions, then we ask him the three questions, and Adeha Karnas Harosh he proves that he's a bardas, and then we can go ahead and execute because the hakana proved that he's a bardas. That's the way he's learning, okay? So just writing the instructions alone would not be enough.
For Rav Avdumi.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's a good question. We have to look into it further, but that seems to be what he's saying. Otherwise, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. It would completely contradict the first page. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Dov. According to the preceding explanation, a competent individual can issue instructions for executing a get through writing. Right? Amar b'yaisi b'rabon, b'bar yanan kamino, we're talking a healthy person. L'mon yoget, ani omer, misasa kai b'shta raisav. He was busy with his own documents. Maybe he was, you know, kind of like preoccupied with other matters, and he wrote it in a state of confusion. Okay? It's like, he was reviewing the credit card, you know, bills. He was getting all upset. Give her a get. Get rid of her, you know. It's like, so we can't rely on the order because it's deemed to have been made without proper authorization. Even if the husband later says that he truly wishes to divorce his wife, we still have to be concerned that he issued the original order without proper concentration. So the order is invalid and the get has no validity. So that's an amazing...
It's funny that we just questioned Chashu, you know, Kharashotin and Cotton, but a regular Gadol, right, if he says give a get, oh, he's normal. You know what I'm saying? We never have the Hechitimtzi to say, I guess there are, if he's enraged or whatever, but it could be a simple situation that he gives a get for. Right? And we don't say, oh, wait, we have to test him to see if he's actually bardas or not. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying stop, and Hilchos Gittin, I'm saying.
Well, this answer is b'bariyan kaminon.
Right, so I'm saying...
We're talking about a healthy person.
Right, you're machzik that he's a bari, but I'm saying the act itself of, I guess...
The instructions in writing is apparently not enough. We have to verify it, I guess. Right?
Because again, I think about a cheresh, right? You're talking about a cheresh, so we're assuming that a cheresh is not bardas.
But not according to this teretz. According to this teretz, b'borian on kamino, we're talking about...
So the cheresh is a bardas.
We're talking about someone who's not a cheresh.
Oh, a stama person.
That's what it says here. We're dealing with a healthy, mentally competent person in the b'risa.
When the Bryce you say that now Rav Yossi,
Rav Yossi is saying that. In 3, he says, the Bryce says he cannot issue instructions for executing again in writing. It's not talking about deaf mute at all. It's talking about a healthy individual
right. Who
sends written instructions to the scribe. So on the bottom of 4, he says, this concern applies only when he's not in the location of the scribe or the witnesses and he sends the instructions from elsewhere. If he's together with them and he chooses to instruct them in writing such that there is no doubt as to his true intentions, then, of course, the written order is valid. He brings that from the Tshuvas Tzemach Tzedek. So that seems to be, you know, the distinction he's making over here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So according to each of these explanations, the Braisa has no bearing on Rav Shmuel Gamliel's ruling, and that would explain why Rabbi Yochanan did not choose that Braisa to prove to when he was quoting those who argue on Rav Shmuel Gamliel. Okay, let's go on. But Tony Kane, it was taught in a Braisa that when a mute person delivers instructions by nodding, we must test them 3 times. And we have to much person we talk about. When do you have to test him? That's when. This is interesting. He suddenly lost his power of speech from within a state of good health. So he was healthy, and all of a sudden he was in shtatek. So the way I would say it, it's like you're afraid of stroke. Right? All of a sudden you can't speak, you're afraid he had a stroke.
They had an episode of Little House on the Prairie where the little girl saw a tiger, and then she got so scared that she lost her ability to be able to talk.
Well,
ain't no doping.
I would say that in that case, You don't have to test.
So I'm sorry, I was a little bashful to ask my question, so I'm going to try to answer. So does this have any bearing? Can we learn from all this nodding about the famous Avram Fried Tanya? Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, Pamachas nechnasti lahakter v'tayres, Yisak kasvila. And at the very end, after Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha gives a bracha, Yiratzom v'fanecha, Sheyichmeshu rachmecha eskaska, V'gol rachmecha, it ends, V'nena li b'rosho. That this Akasrikel or Hashem or whatever it is nodded to him in right. acknowledgement. He nodded.
Right.
So what's the pshat with nodding at that in that Gemara?
Why are you not embarrassed to ask this question? getting a nod for the Rebbeinu Shalom is about as good as it gets.
Right.
You know, for a king to say yes to a request, it's actually below the king's dignity and kavod. The king will lift up the scepter to indicate that Esther will live. It's little movements, the least amount movement as much as possible. That's kavod malchus. That's what I would say the pshat in here comes from Roshas. Okay. So I don't think it's bearing exactly over here. So again, so it says over here, if he suddenly lost his power of speech from within a good state of health, that's where you're concerned that it was a loss of mental capacity. So we got to check three times. Avol nishtatek machmas kulyo, he was previously sick. Dayo pamachas, then it's already good enough one time because, you know, you could say that he's weak. That's what it says over here. Okay. Mantana cheresh. So, who is the Tana who says that a deaf mute is not a bar das? The like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tani is a Bryce that says the following: Rabbi Yehuda, Ma'aseh b'Bonav, Sharav Yerkin ben Gudgada, Shayukulan Chershin. Yeah, the children of the sons of Yerkin ben Gudgada, they were all deaf mutes, all of them. Vayukol ha'taharis shebi Yerushalayim nasan al gabayim. And you know what they did? You know what the people used to do? People who were makban on taras, they used to be careful to be shomer the taras. So when they had to go away, go away for a few. Remember, to keep taras tar, it has to have constant shmira, right? If you go away, if you leave your taras unguarded and unsupervised, you can't assume the tar. So what would they do? They would leave it by Rabbi Yechon Gudgada's sons. And they were the shomrim for the taras. This is the Eidos of Rabbi Yehuda. So obviously you see, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that they were B'nai Das. Because if they weren't B'nai Das, they couldn't be shown with the Torah, right? Amuloi, I just want to say one thing real quick. I was looking at the Hakdama to my friend here, the State Sofim. You've seen these for my Brahmin before. I bought a couple of these from, Zundel. He had them on his website for a good price, so I bought a bunch of them. So this is the one on Trumas. So I opened it up last night to take a quick peek at his Hakdama, because his Hakdama is very good shmak. So, this is all done with his whole work was done with the encouragement of Chaim Kanievsky. When he brought him his State Sofim on Talmud Bavli, when the completion of, he has an every Masechta in Talmud Bavli, so he brought to him, went to Eretz Yisrael, he lives in Brooklyn, so he went to Eretz Yisrael to show him, to celebrate, and Reb Chaim said to him, okay, now you finished Bavli, now it's time to do the same thing on Yerushalmi. So he started working on Yerushalmi. So that's what he did. So, in the beginning of the Hakdama, he says that he'll stick in the introductory remarks 10 questions that he asked him on the Masechta to Reb Chaim, and Reb Chaim, in his usual style, will give usually 2-word answers at most. So, one of the questions he asked was here. The seventh question. He asked him, Pela v'hafle, this is unbelievable. Why was he punished? That all his children were deaf mutes? You know, what did he do wrong? So Reb Chaim answers, Yitakein shagam ishto haisa charasha. So basically he's saying it was genetic. That's what he writes. So I just thought it was interesting.
Is anybody online? Because Zubdovid texted me, he said he can't get on. So I said just to call my phone and I'll put it next to you and you can listen.
Yeah, well, Tzvi Shir is online, so we know that it's working.
He can't. I told him to call my phone. And if he calls, I'll bring it up.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Okay, so this is Rabbi Yehuda's Raya. The word bring a raya from Rabbi Yehuda that he's not like the Mishnah. The Mishnah says it's not that a cheresh is not can't be mafir shuma. Over here, you see they're bnei das because they're shomer, right?
David. Yeah. I'm gonna put it next to Rabbi Sloyman. All right.
Welcome, Rabbi David.
Thanks. I can't get in.
Well, you know what? We're gonna have to have some kind of a technology
shear
where we explain all this, okay?
Yeah. Where are you up to?
We are up to 3B3. Don't put that on.
No, don't mute it.
He won't be able to hear me.
No, he'll be able to hear. You won't hear him.
He has to mute.
Oh, you mute. Okay.
If you mute, he won't hear me.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, please mute your phone, please. You know how to do that? David? Okay, good. I'm assuming you know how to push the mute button. Again, we're saying, just to make sure you're with us, so Rabbi Yehuda is not the Tana of our Mishnah. It's not our mission that Apostles Cherish is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda said that there was a Maisa with the sons of Rabbi Yochim and Gudgadah, and they were all Charashim, and they were given the assignment of watching the Taurus in Yerushalayim. So you see, they must have been Bnei Das. Amulai, so the Chacham said to Rabbi Yehuda, you can't deduce anything from that, as far as Truma is concerned. Bnei Shah HaTaharos Einon Srichas Makshava. When it comes to Tara, you don't need Makshava. You just need Shmira. To be a guard, you don't have to have much seichel. Nasis al gavacher shayt v'katan. It could be done that way. Aval truma v'maisus. To take off trumas and maisus, like we said before in the beginning of the sechta. V'nech shavlochem. You have to have actually das. So there's no proof to it. So our Mishnah is according with those chachamim who argued on Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Now the Gemara asks, wait a second. If they don't have das, the way the Chachamim are learning, then how were they able to watch the Tyrus? Wouldn't the Tyrus become possible because there's no attention being given to them? If the deaf mute is mentally incompetent, then any Tyrus he's assigned would automatically be disqualified because he's incapable of full concentration. So that's the question they asked the Chachamim. Rabbi Yossi B'Shem Rabbi Law, the Gemara answers, in kosa b'hem makshava. Thought is not, when it comes to Taurus, thought is not written in the context of Taurus. Shmira kosa b'hem, safeguarding. Although safeguarding Taurus requires attention, they are fit, the deaf mute is fit to safeguard. He's capable of paying attention, okay? All he has to do is watch it. That's all he has to do. The thought process is different. Okay? 19, as explained previously, separating Truma is a legal process of creating a designation that transforms the portion from a state of Tevel to a state of Truma. So there you need an Akshav. Safeguarding Taurus is not a legal process. It's merely ensuring that the Taurus that it has now is preserved. So that's just a question of keeping away the animals and the people and whatever else might come running by here. That he can do. That's basically the answer. Okay, so we got through Daf Gimel. Daf Gimel was a difficult page. This page will be a little easier. Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. The Hashoyta. Okay. The Hashoyta. This is the Gemara in Chagiga as well. Simone Shoyta. The signs of a Shoyta are as follows. Hayotz B'Laila goes out at night alone. Halom Besakvaras, he sleeps in the graveyard. Hamakareas Ksuso, he rips his garments. Hamamit Mashinoisimlo, he destroys whatever is given to him. These are actually four things. In the Bavli, you only have three things. There's a lot of differences between Bavli and Yerushalmi in this sugya. I'm not going to be going through them. But you look at the footnotes if you're interested in seeing how it all plays out. Amar Rav Huna, Hushie Kulhembo. Rav Huna says they have to have all the signs in the one person. The law came, because if not, what would you say? On the Yomar, I could give an excuse for each one of these things. I could say the following. Hayotze b'lai law, the guy's going out at night. Kinitrachas. He was seized by kinitrachas. Let's see, what is he saying? Seven. That's an illness brought on by overheating of the body, so it might cause the person to go outside to cool off. Otherwise, it could be a melancholy that might cause a person to seek solitude, whatever it is. So maybe that's why he did it. Halon v'beis akvaris, maybe he's being makdil l'sheitim. He's offering up things to the sheit. You know, if you remember the story in Brachas, he was listening to...
And then the Shabbos said that we're not going to talk anymore.
Right, but he overheard them say, so talking
about... Nobody said that he's a shote.
No one did, yeah. But the reason why he went to there to begin with was because he got in a fight with his wife, right?
He got kicked out, dog house.
He was sent out. So it's funny that Gemara doesn't say Lomba Beisak Forest because Sholach Ishto... doesn't say that. Because you know what, if you get in such a big fight with your wife, you'd be so shayna shayta. Hamakareas kusay, if you tear your garments, then maybe kulikus. Maybe it's an absent-minded individual who doesn't realize what he's doing. Vahamaabe mashinoisim loy kudiyakus. Maybe he's an absent-minded individual. So there's an explanation for every one of these. So it's only, Rav Huna said, it's only if he has all of them. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz famously said, this is his vart, I love this vart. He said, so if he has all of them, you could say four answers also, all four reasons. This is because of this, and this is because of that, and this is because of this. So Rav Chaim said to Yesod, if you have a kasha, and you have one teretz that answers all four kashas, and you have four teretz that answer the four kashas, the one answer, he's a shaita. That's a great yesod. Whenever you have four questions on why something is, and you have one answer that answers it, that's the answer. Now, we don't pass them.
Why does Igmar use two different words for absent-minded individual?
Kulikus and kudiyukus?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Strange. Okay.
Yeah. Not sure. It's a good question. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilo Achas Mehem. Rabbi Yochanan says even one is enough. That's how we paskin. Even through exhibiting one of these behaviors. Now, there's a footnote here which is actually it's a long one, 13. So. What he says is that the one about destroying everything that's given to him, that is all by itself. That's what Rabbi Yochanan was saying. He destroys that's everything. Enough. That's enough. But the other three, he would agree, right?
Well, then you need all three.
You need all three, yeah. Only if he exhibits all three of these behaviors together is he considered insane. According to Rabbi Yochanan, there are two criteria. A, he destroys everything. B, he goes out alone at night, lodges in the graveyard, rents his garments. Right, that's what it says here. The Bavli disagrees. I want to skip over that for a second. Yeah, but you see, most authorities rule in accordance with the Bavli's understanding of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that a single type of behavior suffices to identify someone as deranged. If you look in Evan Ezer, Simon Kuf Chaf Aleph, which I looked up earlier today, that's in the Hilchas Gittin. They have a simon there about of being a bardas, and there it says, do one of these things, that's enough. The same is true of a person who exhibits, the Rambam says in Hilchos Eidos, that the same thing is true about a person who exhibits any other type of bizarre behavior. These are just examples, the Gemara says. It doesn't have to be only these three things, right? Even one not listed in the Braisa. The Braisa says it provides examples of types of behavior. Okay, and then there's a lot of people, including him. He has in his notes on this page, he brings down the famous mice of the Kliva get. It's called the Get Me Kliva, and it split the Gdolim around the whole world. And have you heard about the Kliva? The Kliva get was a young man who during the Sheva Brachas ran away from the city, and they couldn't locate him. They found him later, and then they insisted they wanted him to give a get, so he gave the get, and then there was a question of whether is he a bardas, is he not a bardas to give the get since he displayed such bizarre behavior, because I think he ran away on Friday night. It was Shabbos. He ran away, so it was very bizarre, and I don't have the whole mice clear in my head right now, but if you're interested in seeing it, if you have a Binyan Ariel. That's a sefer from Shulman Amsterdam on Chumash. The Binyan Ariel, in the beginning of the sefer, has a whole history of the story of the Kliva Get, which is a fascinating story. The Gedolim of the whole generation were involved in that Machlagas, the Shagas Aryeh, Nei Mehuda, and it was, you had the Bezdin in Frankfurt. It was a big thing. Yeshua, a lot of people were in this big Shiloh. Anyway, so that's a little history there. Next, Kuriyuka same by Akas Mikalelu. He doesn't have any of these signs, though his actions are invalid nonetheless. Mao Kuriyukas, what is that? Amrabiyasi Chamim. It's called Chamim. Chamim 16, he says it's confused. Muhumam. Okay. And some people say it's the name of a demonic spirit that overtakes someone who drinks fresh wine. I'm not exactly clear what this is. Also, of the Kumay Rabbi Yossi, there was a case, B'chad Tarsai, a certain weaver, when they would give him a red thread among black threads, he would continue to work without noticing anything amiss. Because if you're a professional weaver and you're using a certain type of color, and all of a sudden there's a different color thread, you should stop what you're doing and get that thread out of there. And this guy, he just kept on working like he didn't notice anything. So they figured he must be losing his mind, right? Or Achav. That's not good for a guy who's a weaver to be colorblind. Achav Gosimuk Huloi, a black thread among red threads, he would consistently continue to work. Yeah. Others say different. Okay. Duhit Kuriyukas Shamachachamim, and Rabbi Yossi said that's a Kuriyukas. Now, Palmim Shaito, Palmim Cholum. So let's suppose someone is sometimes deranged and sometimes he's stable. That could be said about a lot of people. But let's say this is a real person who has, I don't want to say he has epilepsy. See, epilepsy. I had a friend who had epilepsy, and I was actually there during one of his epileptic attacks. It's actually very scary because they fall on the ground and they start shaking, and you have to try to make sure they don't swallow their tongue. It's a very scary thing. But when they're having their epileptic episode, they're not giving anyone any instructions. They're totally out of it. So this is, but this is
like a split personality or bipolar.
But maybe bipolar. I don't know. Maybe
epilepsy is.
No, yeah, it's different. But it's, what I'm trying to say here is that this is a similar type of a thing where there's part of the time they're regular, part of the time they're crazy. Okay.
Can you translate chalom as a dreamer, somebody who has like he's thinking about expectations and he's dreaming.
Here he says it's stable.
I know. That's.
So that's not a dreamer.
I don't like that translation.
You don't like translation. Okay.
To me, it sounds like the difference between somebody who's realistic and somebody who is visionary.
So, which is the Shota? Don't answer that question. So problem shota, problem cholom. B'shashu shota, harikus shota chodvarav. When he's a shota, when he's acting shota, so then he has halacha like a shota. B'shashu cholom, when he's healthy, stable. Harikus kipi kechlo chodvarav. Okay, also the k'mei Shmuel. Now here's the story.
I wonder if this is
where cholom
comes from.
Yeah, but cholom here is healthy.
Cholom is healthy.
Over here,
it means. Right.
Yeah, right. Stable. I mean, it could be. Could be Chelm was.
He translates it Dato Slula.
Dato Slula, clear mind, yeah. Also, of the Kumi Shmuel. So there's a story they came in front of Shmuel. That's a person who was suffering from Kordiakas. He wanted to divorce his wife. Omar, so Shmuel said, Kadu Cholom Yiten Get. When he's stable, he can give his wife a get. So now there's a machlokas. It's just going to bring it over here in the English at the top. Then in Gittin there's a case over here. If a healthy man instructs shluchim to write a get and give it to his wife, and then it's oxo kredikas, right? So Rabbi Yochanan says they can carry his instructions even while he's suffering from the kredikas, and Rish Lakish says no, you can only do the shlichas when he is.
Right. So the question would be when is the chalom? Is it when he gives it to the shliach? So then it's fine because he was bari. And if it's not until it gets to the woman's hand, so then he has to be sane. No,
they obviously all agree that they could write the get and they could deliver the get. Ultimately, the question is only when, right?
Right, but I'm saying, is the woman divorced the minute that, I guess if it's her shliach, so she's divorced the minute that the shliach gets the get. If it's his shliach, she's not divorced until it gets to her hands. So then...
That's irrelevant for this discussion.
That's what he's saying.
No.
The issue is,
at the time of the delivery of the get, whether it's shliach, kabbalah, or halacha, regardless... Is he sane at that moment?
Right. So I'm saying, so if it's Shlech Kabbalah, it wouldn't be a question.
It's still a question.
Why?
Because he's not in a state where he can deliver a get. The husband is not in a state where he can divorce his wife because he's not a badass. We have to wait for him to stabilize to be able to deliver on his behalf. That's what.
Right, but I thought
that's what Shlakish is saying.
Right, but I thought with the Kabbalah, she's divorced immediately.
You're right, but in order to deliver the shliach,
so you're saying even with the shliach kabbalah,
it still
has to be that when it gets to the woman's hand, the husband
because
will be
remember safe. Someone there's got to be a shliach delivering it to the kabbalah.
Right,
that shliach can't do his work.
Oh, that's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Not only that, I think that he has to stop his writing as well. If he's told to write the get, and before he starts writing, he gets this. Seizure, we'll call it for lack of a better term.
Right.
He has to stop writing. That's what I would say, according to Rish Lakish. But Rabbi Yochanan is saying that you could deliver it even regardless, because since the original shlichus was done when he was a bar da'as, we can go ahead and proceed on the basis of that original shlichus. So the Gemara is asking, Shmuel seems to be saying like Rish Lakish, because he said when he's healthy, he could deliver the get. That's a little strange because normally we pass in like of Yochanan against Rish Lakish. That's the basis of the Gemara's kasha. That's the Gemara's kasha. Rish Shmuel, Reb Shimon ben Lakish. Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Omar Lakish Yishtafe. That only when he's settled. But according to Reb Yochanan, he could deliver the get even when he's suffering. So now we're on the base. So the Gemara answers. Ruba de Shmuel Minder Reb Shimon ben Lakish. The Gemara is now going to say a little nuance over here. That Shmuel's ruling is even more novel than Rish Lakish's. It's actually consistent with Rabbi Yochanan, and the Gemara is going to explain. To who Amar Shmuel said, Kaduchalim yitin get, when he is stable. There's two different words. There's a word stable, and then there's another word when he's bari, when he's healthy. So stable means that if there's a temporary period of stability between the bouts of insanity, even though he's still afflicted with the chronicus, he could go ahead and deliver the get at that time. That's not what Rish Lakish said. Rish Lakish said when he's healthy. In other words, He can't be in the middle of, let's call it that there are sickly periods where he's going in and out, you know, half hour healthy, half hour not healthy, half hour healthy.
An episode.
He's having an episode, and in that episode, he's in and out of healthiness. But the previous day, he was healthy. The next day, he was healthy, right? So Rish Lakish was saying only Monday and Wednesday can he deliver the get. But Tuesday, when he's having these back and forths, no good. Shmuel said, "Kaihu chalim yitenget," when he is health, when he is stable, and he quotes this pasuk v'atach v'sachli meini v'hachiyeni, may you stabilize me and give me life. Where's this pasuk? It's in Isaiah. So chalim is stable. It represents a partial healing, which is followed by a complete healing, because you see, it's a sachli meini, that's the partial healing. V'hachiyeni, and let me live my life healthy. So it's a partial healing. Some say that this whole word, these two words, were added by a Talmud. The Gra, I don't know if he was masking to the whole Gersa. But anyway, forget about whether you're Gerasin or not Gerasin, but that's the point in the answer of the Gemara. Okay? So it's not consistent with Reb Shimon Lakish. Rather, it's on the contrary, it's like Reb Yochanan. That's the way we're going to learn for now. There are all the ways still in the Gemara. We're not going to get into it now. Hakotan, what about a minor Montanikon? Who learns minor? Let's remind ourselves what the Mishnah said. Look back at the Mishnah on Aleph Amud Aleph. Look closely. Look what it says. It says, Mishnah Gimel, Katan Shalohevi Shtei Saras. Right? So if the katan was not a gadol, so it says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Truma Se Truma. It's a good Truma. Now, in the Reisha of the Mishnah, it said, there's five people that can't be Torah, and one of them is a katan. So now, if you look at the Mishnah, would you say Rabbi Yehuda's Koyluk on the Mishnah? Right? The Mishnah says very clearly, Rabbi Yehuda does not agree with the Tanakhama. Very clearly. So now here, the Gemara is going to ask a question. Man Tani Katan, Deloy Rabbi Yehuda. Who's a Tana that said a minor cannot take off Truma? It's not like Rabbi Yehuda did Tani. There's a Brisa, and the Gemara is going to quote a Brisa. So the footnote, he asks, what do you mean, what are you going to quote a Brisa for? It's the Farish in the Mishnah. Why do you have to quote a Brisa? Let's learn the Brisa first. Katan Sheinichu Aviv B'Miksha. If a father leaves his son in a gourd field, it doesn't mean he abandoned him there. So that, when I first read it, I thought, father, like, abandoned his son. He put him in a field, you know? That's not what it means. He left him in the gourd field to do some work in the gourd field, right? While you're tired, the miner was taking off Truma. And the father is consenting to his actions. Truma se Truma, the Truma is a good Truma. So you see what? You see here that a cotton can take Truma, right?
So because the father's masking to it.
Yeah, right. So, right. So you're asking, you're saying, what are you saying to me? You're saying it's only because the father was masking.
There's a difference. When we say that the cotton can't do it, that's when he just does it on his own volition, and the father doesn't say anything. Here, he does it, and by the father coming and is masking to it, so the father's, you know, saying it should be good.
What you're saying is, what's the raya that Yehuda argues on from this brisa? On the contrary, this brisa maybe is maskim to the Tanakhama. That the Tanakhama says a cotton is possible to be mafresh truma. Over here it says that it's good truma, but only because the father was maskim. That's what you're saying, Tzvi?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question. So he bavarns this problem in the footnotes. So there's two approaches here. The first approach in footnote 8, that the gourds actually belong to the father, okay? Even an adult can never separate truma from someone else's produce without the owner's consent. The father must consent to his son's actions in order for the truma to be separated to be valid. An owner's consent is only going to authorize his agent to separate truma from his produce, but the agent must be roy to take off the truma. So you're right. It is only valid with the father's consent. But the reason we need the father's consent is because the gourds belong to the father. So the raya is, if the katan is roy to take off truma for the father, he has to be roy to take truma himself. That's the raya, the way he's learning in footnote 8. All right? He says in the bottom here, another important point here, that emerges, the brackets, this is a very important point, you have to read it. It comes out of Kontra Yehuda, that not only is a minor able to do truma separation, but he can become a shliach as well to take truma on someone else's behalf. So the same would hold true according to Rabbi Yossi, that a minor who has reached the age of vows and is fit to separate truma is also fit to act as an agent to separate truma for another's produce. And the Shulchan Aruch apparently passes like Rabbi Yossi. So many authorities maintain that a minor of this age can act as an agent for truma separation. In contrast to the general rule that ketanim are usually not roi for shlichus. So that's a long arichas over here. He has many marim makamas for this. It's amazing his bekiyas over here, and this is not surprising knowing the person who is translating our parak as none other than Rabbi Tzvi Neyman. So. So we're reading his work here, and you can tell in the footnotes this is Manasha Baki Nifla. Anyway, so the Gemara says Lohu Shatorim, the minor is not valid if the minor is the one who's separating and making truma. Elo Aviv Hu She'imein Al Yodo, the father is guiding the minor's hand. What this means is, don't think it means he's moving his hands. It's not like by Hilchas Lulav, some people, I think there's a Chayotim that says that if you don't even makna him the Lulav, so you hold the cotton's hands and you shake the Lulav with the cotton, that's a way to get around Lachem, whatever. That's not what it means over here. Here it means, 11, doesn't mean literally that he's physically helping him do the Hafrasha, but rather he reinforces the son's Hafrasha by improving upon it, meaning the son was mafresh some truma, and then the father takes an additional couple of stalks of wheat and adds it to the pile of wheat that the cotton already was mafresh.
The gourds.
I'm sorry, I said wheat. The gourds. Right, the gourds. Sorry. Yeah. When the father improves upon the son's truma, then it's considered as if he has performed it entirely himself. That's what the Chachamim are saying. You, Rabbi Huda, are trying to see from here, oh, you see it's a good that a cotton is good to take truma. No, this case, the father improved upon it, so therefore it's as if he did the whole thing himself, and therefore, because after all, truma is you could set aside truma aide machshava, right? So that's what's happening. The son's separation is not valid. The father can guide the son by taking some produce, adding it to the truma pile, demonstrating that he wishes the entire pile to become designated as truma. In this manner, he's mentally designating the entire pile as truma. So the whole thing, the whole Hafrasha, is done on the day of the father. He brings this from the Achiezer and other people. It's very interesting. Then there is another pshat over here, which I found very interesting. That Imein al Yado comes from the word Amen. When he says Amen, it's as if the father is repeating the designation the son verbalized. So, you know, so the son's saying, this is Truma, and the father says, Amen. That's a funny thing. Anyway, so another pshat. Imein al Yado. So the Gemara asks the following question. Let's suppose the father, they're trying to clarify the Chachamim's sheet over here. Let's suppose the father, Taka, goes ahead and he agrees to the son's Hafrasha, whatever way he does it, by adding to it or saying Amen, whatever it is. So Lemafreya Nasis Truma? Is it become Truma Lemafreya from the time that the son began the designation? mean, let's suppose the father, you know, he's busy in the field. He comes an hour later and he throws some more gourd on top of the pile. So during that interim hour, was it Lamafreya Truma from the very beginning? Or is it, the pshat is that his makshava is taking place right now, and it's only mikanal haba, then it'll be Truma. That's the Gemara's kasha. It's a very specific question on the Kimta, that's what the Gemara is asking. My friend, what's the nafkamina? Nafkamina will be two nafkaminas. One, if a czar ate it in the interim, is he chayiv to pay back the b'shogeg? He's chayiv to pay with the chomesh. Or if a tful yom touched it, a tful yom that touches truma passes the truma. So if the tful yom touched that tvor in the interim, would it disqualify it? These are different nafkaminas. Okay. So is it l'mafrei and asas truma become l'abo amar abshimi nishmina manadol? Let's bring a raya from this brisa, this tosefta, which this tosefta immediately follows the tosefta we just quoted. And therefore, the Gemara is assuming that however we're going to learn the next Tosefta is automatically, we're going to assume for a Davar Pashut also applies to the previous lines of the previous Tosefta. That's the way to learn the Gemara over here. So this is talking about a robber. I come into my backyard and I see you're stealing my stuff. You're not stealing it for yourself. You're stealing. You're taking something that doesn't belong to you, and you're making a truma. You're taking my tevel and making truma. Without my permission. I find you standing in my backyard. Amalai, so he says to the robber, you should really collect from these better ones. This is better stuff. You're taking truma from, mediocre quality. So the rule is like this. If they really are better than the one he took, then he obviously is not objecting to the basic hafrasha. He was just saying, you should have taken even better. But it's vimlav, but if there's nothing better than what he took, then it shows that I'm being sarcastic. Why don't you take this one? This is better than that. You're taking my best stuff. What?
Hold on. When he says, there's better ones, why don't you take from the best one?
Hold on a second. You're remembering the Bavli, yeah.
That was the Bavli.
It's Bavli. It could be. I forget already. The Imlav, but if there's not any better fruits, Choshesh Shem Gazel, you have to be Choshesh. So we're now going to Heyom and Aleph. So the Gemara says, if Mahaya locate Venosin Lo, and if the owner collected more produce and gave it to him, in other words, I'm the Baal Bias, and I added to the pile that the Ganav.
I'm showing that he's a fruit.
I'm showing Benkach or Benkach. It doesn't matter whether it is better or not better. So that's what it says in the Brisa subsequent to that. So Rav Shimi ends it off. Islach lemeimar lemafrei and asks truma. So then you see that what? It's a question actually. Islach meimar lemafrei and asks truma. Can you say that retroactively, the case of the ganav, that I was maskim lemafrei, that it should be truma? Of course not. I didn't even know you were there. You're a ganav. You're going to say that the ganav's truma was lamafreya going to be truma lo mikanal haba, isn't only from going forward? Of hacha, so it follows the case of the minor, which preceded this case, is mikanal haba and asis truma, therefore that's also a case of mikanal haba. So basically that's the Gemara's basic thing. Your question of, is it mikanal haba lamafreya? The same way it was mikanal haba on the seifa, it's mikanal haba on the reisha. Adkan.
So we hold that if somebody takes truma from somebody else, it's fine. I thought we said that if he had a worker in the field,
the Bavli says befeirish that
it's not good.
It's the same kind of thing. Well, actually, the Bavli has a case where I make a shliach, and I don't tell him whether he should take, Ayin Ra, Ayin Yofa, Ayin Beinoni, and he does it. So if I say,
he has better, then it's good. But I'm saying stop.
You're saying stop. If someone is mad for Shalomi Das,
right.
doesn't work.
Right.
No good, that's what we said.
Why don't we say the same thing with the kid?
With what?
Warfield. He's taking Shalomi Das Aviv.
No, the father put him there for that purpose.
What?
That's why he put his kid there in the gourd field to begin with.
to take the truma?
Yes, yes.
That's the whole...
That's the whole kunz, yeah.
That's my point. So Rabbi Yehuda really holds that a cotton to take is left the truma?
Yep. I forgot to give you the answer to the question. So that's why, again, I left off with the question. I didn't answer the question. So the question we asked was, right, remember, what you have to prove from a braisa that Yehuda disagrees with Tanna Kamma, the Mishnah says it. Teretz is this answer, because from the Mishnah you wouldn't necessarily know, because it says, Katan Shalohevi Shnei Saris. Maybe that means he's a certain, you know, he's a certain level of the, he's like 11, 12. But if he would be an 8, then maybe Rabbi Yehuda will be masking. So we prove from this braisa, the braisa is clearly a cotton that's a real cotton. And that shows that he holds that even a cotton that's a real bona fide cotton, also, you know, as long as he's a bardas.